Amazon has everything for back to school. Zebra lunchbox? Check. Cool Adidas gear like t-shirts, shoes, and backpacks? Check. Triceratops folders and pencils? Check. Laser cat t-shirts? Check. Get your back-to-school shopping done now at Amazon.com/back-to-school and enjoy free shipping on millions of items. No need to leave your home or hassle with crowds. Amazon.com. No better place to get everything back to school from A to Z.
Straight out of Austin, Texas, it's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first on Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 90, the Big 9-0, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our friends at Bud Light. Cedric Golden here with my boy, the Duck, Kirk Bowles. Jam-packed show bracket. The brackets are ready.
It's madness.
It's time for madness. It's Thursday. Big game starting in just a couple of hours, guy.
It's madness, and I'm already mad about my bracket.
Did Villanova lose yet?
They better not. I don't know what time they tip.
I'm going to tell you, I look at my bracket that we ran in the paper. I don't know. Arizona, what was I thinking?
I like Arizona.
I like them too, but they're Arizona. They've broken hearts before, dog.
Well, they won the Pac-12 with ease. They got a chip on their shoulder.
Me, you, and 10 other guys could have competed for the Pac-12 this year.
Hey,
dog.
They got the best player in the country probably, right?
The best player money can buy.
DeAndre Ayton.
$100,000 that we know of. Good for him. Sean Miller broke bread. And The only difference between Sean Miller and a lot of other guys is people know about it.
He was on wiretaps, and we still don't know his degree of innocence or guilt. But they've sure been called out in the national media, so they've got something to prove. So I think that's a good pick.
I know it's a good
pick. Wait a minute, for people that didn't see it, you picked Arizona over?
I picked Arizona over Kansas in the final.
And I picked Villanova over Arizona.
Can you even read a bracket?
Well, I was trying to find it here. I wanted to make sure I picked it, but I had Villanova, Arizona, so we got one game difference. I also had North Carolina and Michigan State in my Final Four. Your other two are?
Oh, man, I can't even remember. I put West Virginia in my Final Four and
Kansas, didn't you?
Well, Kansas is in the final, so
yeah.
Who did I have coming out of the West? North Carolina, I believe.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we both had North Carolina. So we both had North Carolina and Arizona, you know, coming out of the West and the South. So I didn't go chalk, I think I've got a 1, a 2, a 3, and a 4.
Mm-hmm, that's good.
And you're not too far away. You've got a 4 winning it all, which is not absurd.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's why Virginia, which obviously already has an injury with DeAndre Hunter.
Yeah, that's their sixth man
of the year.
I know.
People are saying, oh, boy, that's just a crippling. And they don't have a deep bench anyway.
I hope, I hate when kids get hurt. But that kind of opens it up a little bit for me.
It does.
Yeah.
And they're the South Regional of Virginia. They did Virginia no favors.
Well, you get Arizona. Is Duke in there?
No, but Kentucky
you
is.
You got Kentucky.
Cincinnati. Tennessee.
And guess who else is in there?
Who else?
Your Texas Longhorns.
They're in
dog.
There, too. Wow. That region is loaded.
Your Texas Longhorns are in there, and you know what? We're going to have beat writer Brian Davis come in here and discuss later, and then after that we're going to have women's basketball beat writer Davis coming up. But first, we got a very special guest. Alyssa, cue the phone call, one of the friends of our podcast.
And we don't have that many friends.
Us once again. Check out our conversation with Shaka Smart on Second Thought. Joining us via phone in the dungeon, a friend of the podcast. I think this is the third appearance for one Shaka Smart.
I wish we had him on every week.
I do too, but he's smarter than that. We'll take him when we can get him. Coach, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Well, Coach, Got before we get to the heavy lifting, I do have a bone to pick with you. You beat West Virginia, punched your ticket, you get in, and then I'm not there because I'm out of town, and all of a sudden I'm getting all of this boxing stuff in my Kirk Bowles column. Kirk Bowles hates boxing, number one. And number two, you've been holding out on me. I'm the boxing aficionado at the Statesman. How did you keep that a secret for 3 years?
Well, I'm far from an aficionado, but I do have unbelievable respect for that sport and ladies in that sport because they go all the way to the limit, and they test the limits. And the documentary Legendary Nights is one of my favorite of all time.
The Mickey Ward, Arturo Gatti epic trilogy, one of the best trilogies since Ali Frazier. You've got fight in your team. There's no way you could have seen what's come down this year. Illness, suspensions, injuries, yet you punched your ticket. What does that say about the resiliency of your Texas Longhorns?
I think it just says a lot about how our guys are together and overcome a lot of things, never given up. There's been so many close games that we've been a part of, and some of them we've won and some of them we've lost. And I think as a coach and sometimes as a player too, it's easy to focus on the close losses because those are so heartbreaking. But I think the fact that our guys have hung in there and found a way to win some of the close wins, actually, obviously, that's the difference between us playing on Friday and us not playing.
Well, you're right about that. You've had to be resilient. And I don't know if you would have had a full head of hair, would you have lost it all by now this season, Chaka?
Well, if we would have had our whole team, I mean, it just would have been such an interesting year. So I wish we could have seen what would have happened, just because Andrew was really, really coming out and shooting the basketball from outside. I mean, the game was slowing down for him in terms of just seeing things differently and shooting close to 50% from three. And as you guys, that's the area offensively where we've been really the most inconsistent and struggled the most. So I just, you know, it's interesting to think about what would have been different if you had him out there. I think for Kerwin Roach, the season goes a lot differently as well if you have Andrew out there, because it takes a lot of pressure off of him.
Yeah, no question. I mean, if you were getting 15 a night from Andrew Jones, and it just affects everything. It's not just you get maybe additional 12 or 15 points a night. It affects everybody else and the whole dynamics of the team, right?
It does. I mean, it would have been such a different year because with him being out and out with the terrible disease he has, that affected our team just from the standpoint of you know, the way that the guys would talk about him and the way that, you know, we would use that as part of our why for what we were doing. So that wouldn't have been there if he was healthy. So it just would have been a whole different year. But, you know, you could say the same about 2 years ago if Cam Ridley wouldn't have gone
sure.
down. You just, as a coach, you have to take twists and turns of the season and make the best out of them. And that's what our guys have tried to do, and now here we are on Friday.
And how is Andrew? We know he checked out of MD Anderson in Houston. I know you've been talking with him constantly and visiting with him, and I think Snoop even told me Sunday that Andrew was saying he wanted to shoot with the team before you guys left for Nashville. What's the latest on Andrew and his mindset and how he's recuperating and recovering, hopefully?
His attitude has just been phenomenal. He's taken such a great approach towards, you know, the treatment and all the things that he's had to do as part of that. Ed mentioned he recently was released from the hospital, but he still goes multiple times a week
right.
to do outpatient treatment. He's going to continue to do treatment on and off, you know, the coming months here. According to the plan of his doctors. But, I mean, Kirk, he's working out.
Mm-hmm.
He's shooting. He's being as active as, you know, as his doctors will let him be to, you know, get back out on the court. But obviously, he wants to get healthy first.
Well, you play the 27-7 Nevada Wolfpack, and it's 3:30 p.m. Friday at the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville. We were speaking with you the other day after your Selection Sunday presser, and you mentioned the Martin brothers, Caleb and Cody. You tried to get them back in the day. For people that haven't seen the Wolfpack play, what do those two guys bring to the table?
Cedric, they're as versatile as anybody in the country. And the thing that's really unique about them is, and they've always been, they're very different from each other. So they're identical twins. And you know how twins can kind of go either way. They can either try to be really different from each other,
mm-hmm.
or they can try to be the exact same. So the two of them really like each other. They get along well. They're best friends. They obviously look exactly the same from what I can tell. They don't do different hairstyles or anything. I try to look differently. But again, their personalities and their game are extremely different. Caleb Martin is the player of the year in their conference, the Mountain West Conference. And Cody Martin is the defensive player of the year in the Mountain West Conference. He also plays point guard for them. Defends the four-man, rebounds the ball at a very high level, and is just extremely versatile. They're both guys that will be drafted in the NBA draft, whether they put their name in this year or they have one more year, whether they go next year.
Well, and you got your hands full, obviously. And it doesn't sound like they have anybody like a Mo Bamba. You know, don't have anybody 6'10", 6'11", in the post. How do you use that to your advantage? They're athletic. I'm sure they want to run, get up and down the court. They score 83 points a game. You've got the size advantage. How's that cat and mouse game going to play out Friday in Nashville?
Well, it's interesting, Kirk, because we have a size advantage on the front line, and they have a size advantage in the backcourt.
Right.
Because 5-6 guys that they play the lion's share of the minutes are between 6'7 and 6'8. And so when they have those guys in the game, they are just completely interchangeable. I mean, they switch ball screens. It really doesn't matter who guards who for them. And so what they're going to try to do to Mo is the same thing that, you know, the Texas Techs and the West Virginias and people like that have done, which is be extremely comfortable with him, get underneath of him, play lower than him,
mm-hmm.
and just try to kind of wedge him out of the position he wants to be in. What we have to do is make sure that, first of all, we do a great job on the defense, making things hard on them, contesting three-point shots, and making them miss. And then when we make them miss, we've got to grab the ball and get out in transition, because that's a way to score and get downhill on them before they get set.
Right.
In that court, because they switch so much, it's really important for us to move the ball and then try to get the ball in the paint and then to do a really good job on the offensive glass, because, as you mentioned, we have a size advantage with Jericho, with guys like that. Those guys can be active on the glass. That gives us a huge jump.
And you're going up against Eric Musselman, one of the better coaches in the business, a generational guy whose dad was also a longtime NBA coach. Do you know Eric, and if you do, what's been his philosophy, his style of coaching from teams you've seen from him?
I don't know him. Obviously, I've known of him for years and years, back to many years ago when he was, I think he was NBA head coach twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, because of my coaching background in from Ohio, I know about his father and some of the innovative stuff he did as a coach way back when he was a coach at Ashland College, which is in Northeast Ohio.
Wow.
These guys, they're basketball minds. Obviously it's genetic and they're really, really good at what they do. It's interesting. You ask about philosophy, their philosophy there. The biggest thing, as you guys know, is always who you have on the floor and what they've. It's pretty interesting what they've done. they've taken the philosophy of they're going to take as many transfers as they can.
They've done that.
So, for instance, they have four guys sitting out right now that will be eligible for them that, you know, are Division I transfers. In their starting lineup, Kendall Stevens came from, he hit 118 threes this year for Nevada. Caleb Martin, Cody Martin, Jordan Caroline, those are their best four players. All those guys came to Nevada, sat out a year, and then, you know, some of things. On the court, they do a great job in the offensive end, spacing the floor. They're as versatile and interchangeable as any team in the country. For instance, Jordan Caroline, they're, I guess you would call him the five-man, even though he's really not.
Right.
The biggest, strongest guy. He'll get the rebound and push it full court like a point guard. So literally we have to be aware of him coming down the floor and attacking. He'll shoot threes. They'll all shoot threes. So we certainly have to defend them differently than we would a more traditional team.
You know, speaking of philosophy, and that's very unusual to have that many transfers, as you know, and it's hard to get transfers or JUCOs or either into Texas frequently because of the admission standards here. Can you explain your recruiting philosophy a little bit, where it stands now after 3 years? Because you've gotten two probable, almost definite, two lottery picks in 2 years. And a lot of people want to say, well, where's Havoc? Where's Havoc that Shaka did so well and got him into a Final Four at VCU? And I remember that you said at your opening press conference, I don't know if we'll play Havoc here ever, or it's kind of a mindset more than a certain structure. How do you juggle recruiting players that hopefully maybe go to the NBA and might even be one and done and still play that defensive style that you like?
Well, I'll tell you a quick anecdote that Coach Mac Brown told me when I first got here. And then I'll get to the recruiting piece. He told me, and he's given me so much good advice. He said, one thing you need to understand about Texas. He said, you're going to recruit some five stars and you're going to recruit some three stars.
Right.
Because there's three stars that can come here and be really, really good players.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about football, but obviously it applies to basketball as well. He said, but one thing you need to understand is when the three stars are here, because it's Texas and because they're getting here next to the five stars, they see the five stars on the wall, they think that they're five stars. And so the reason I bring that up is in recruiting, obviously not everyone's the same. So guys come in and you want to help guys be the best version of themselves. But in the sport that I coach, which is unlike any other, everyone comes in college with the hopes and dreams of not necessarily being in college for 4 years. And as you and I both know, some of these guys, certainly that's the probable path for them is to be in college for the duration. And then there's guys like Mo Bamba that the obvious path is to be in college for 1 year. So, I've gotten the question a lot. Well, to recruit one and done guys. Well, we've recruited two guys like that, and they've been both been guys that fit in with, you know, the way we wanted to do things culturally and as people. I think there's only really a couple programs in the country that can get by on recruiting mostly or just guys like that.
Right.
For us, the vast majority of guys we recruit need to be guys that in college for some time and you need to come in and develop and hopefully can come in and help the team early in their career, but also are guys that would be better as sophomores than freshmen. It would be better as juniors than they were as sophomores. Obviously the challenge that comes into play there is sometimes even those guys don't stick around as long as you might think. As you know, I mean, when the season gets done, it's our job to support these guys in doing what's best for them. It's not our job to say, hey, you have to come back because that's what's best for me. You know, the way I go about things in coaching is we're trying to help these guys grow and develop and become the best version of themselves. We're trying to help them reach their goals and their dreams. Obviously, their number one goal, ultimately, is to play in the NBA. So you have to balance with that the reality of where a guy is in his process, because I use that word reality. Sometimes one person's reality is different than sure. what someone else might think.
Sure.
And I think one of the biggest challenges in our is for these guys getting an accurate assessment of what their true value is as a basketball player. I'm not talking about as a person, but I'm talking about as it relates to the NBA. Right. So going back to your question, our goal is to bring in guys that we think can help our program both on the floor and also as we continue to build the culture that we want to have here that centers around three core values: relationships, growth, and victory, and the principles that we try to adhere to underneath of those. We don't want to bring anyone in that doesn't fit in with that, but at the same time, we want to bring in guys that can play. In every given year, you might need more help right away
sure.
than you do in other years.
Right.
You know, and then in any given year, a guy like Chase Fabris is a great example. He came in here and we knew he was a guy to develop and needed to get stronger mm-hmm. and needed confidence and needed to grow. And as we mentioned earlier, if you have your full complement of guys, if Ant doesn't get sick, if Eric Davis is on the floor, Chase Fabris' role is a little it is right now. Now, that's a positive from the standpoint of him getting a chance to show what he can do and gain valuable experience and have some great moments, and but also take some lumps and learn from those. But, you know, from the standpoint of right now and trying to be the best team you can be, it certainly makes things challenging. But that's exciting for me because, you know, that's what these guys come to college for.
And real quickly, Adam Silver is not really in favor of the one and done. What's your degree of confidence that maybe the NBA could change that rule and do so rather quickly, maybe even this summer?
You know, they're talking so much about it. The thing about it, Kirk, is the NBA is going to do what's best for the NBA.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And they, you know, they're running a business that's, you know, we wouldn't expect them to do anything other than that.
Sure.
I do think there's, you know, a certain degree of, I guess, quote-unquote, sympathy for some you know the challenges that college basketball has, but that's a distant second to
right.
them deciding based on their business model what's best. I do agree that the very very best should be able to go to the NBA whenever they want to go to the NBA or they're ready to go to the NBA. The mm-hmm. LeBron Jameses of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should be able to go to the NBA. I don't think they should be forced to wait a year. I might be, you know, in the minority on that.
Right.
And I also agree in theory, and again, this is much tougher in practice than it is in theory, but I also agree that the guys that come to college, you want them to understand the phenomenal value of being at a place like the University of Texas on full scholarship with all the resources and all the support and all the things that go along with it. You want them to really get a sense for how valuable that is in the moment. They'll get it later on. You know, Connor Lambert came a week ago from Japan because he's got an injury and he's a couple years removed and he sat in practice yesterday and he said, wow, he said that if I only just understood what I had when I was here, I mean, he was a high level kid. So I just think the more we can do to try to promote it, again, the challenge is the be all and end all of the NBA. That will never change for these guys. That's how it was for me. And I played division basketball. So it tells you how crazy I am. but that's where they want to be. And that's not going to change. And, you know, I don't blame anyone for that. I mean, it's a special, special place. But it's only 450 guys or 500 guys that are at that level, which necessarily means 96, 97, 98% of guys are not going to make it.
Exactly. Chuck, last one for me before we let you go. This is going to be your 100th game at Texas coming up. You're 50-49. Has this been a tougher challenge than you anticipated? And how happy are you right now as a head coach of the University of Texas?
I love the opportunity every day to coach our guys. I love the guys we have here. I love what we're building. I think that this year our guys have made so much progress in the areas that we've tried to work on and spend time on. Sometimes that progress has been displayed on the court for everyone to see, and sometimes it hasn't. So I'm extremely excited about that. I love coaching here. My family loves being here. To your question about, you know, where we are as a program and, you know, in almost three years in, obviously you're never all the way where you want to be. Has there been some unforeseen challenges? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Has there been even at times some unlucky breaks? Absolutely. But, you know, as we tell our guys, the key is to respond. Focus on the next most important thing. And I'm very confident that as we keep bringing in quality people, as we keep breathing life into them and helping them understand how important this experience is, not only for their careers, but for their lives, I think we can do better and better things. Cedric, you referenced our record. Obviously, we want that to get better and better. And we've made a huge jump from last year's tough, tough season. I certainly expect us to continue to make jumps. Listen, no one wants to win big or wants to win championships more than me. And that's what I came down here to do. But as you guys know, when you go through some of the twists and turns you've been through, building the program that you want to build, that you want to sustain, it does take time, and that's what we're in the middle of doing. And I'm really excited about the growth in that. I'm excited about the guys we have coming in, the guys we have coming back.
Well, the Texas Longhorns face Nevada 3:30 Friday on, I believe it's on is it TBS, Doc?
I think it is TBS.
I'm thinking it's TBS at the Bridgestone Arena. I will be there. Unfortunately, Mr. Bowles will not. I know you're going to miss him. But win two games and you'll see him again.
Win two games and I'll talk to you guys next week.
Shaka, we appreciate you being on. You're a friend of the program, and Sed and I both really like and admire you. And you're really a man of strong character and integrity, and Texas is lucky to have you.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. That's what you guys do.
Best of luck.
I'll see you in Tennessee.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
We are back. And we got a special guest lined up for you in the dungeon live. Friend of the podcast, Brian Davis, is in the house.
Hello, boys.
It's basketball time. It's dance time. And you got your dancing shoes on, Brian?
I do. You know what's funny is that they have a little bit of dust on them because they've been in my closet for 2 years.
Okay. Yeah, but you came out.
But they came out, and you know what? I had to... had to use some muscles I hadn't used in a couple
of
years,
the
NCAA muscles.
I love it. Brian Davis coming out of the closet here on Second Thought with his dancing shoes.
Hey, let's
so great. So great. Don't you just love Austin?
Oh,
so accepting,
God,
so progressive.
Here we go.
10th seed, the Longhorns, never a doubt.
Never a doubt.
Not even in the play-in game, all right?
What play-in game?
No doubter.
It's a play-a-hater game, maybe.
There you know.
Did
go.
That surprise you that they were a 10th seed?
Yeah, it definitely surprises me that Texas missed the play-in game because I really thought that's where they were headed. I kind of thought they would get a favorable draw against not even one of these mid-major type opponents. I thought they would get a team that they could win relatively easy over, and then they would advance to the first round. But to skip that altogether, I mean – not only is Texas uncomfortably, but Texas isn't even anywhere close to this conversation of, well, Oklahoma or Oklahoma State, and you left Baylor out and all that. Texas isn't – they're not even in all that.
No. Texas got out of that and didn't have to go through all that drama.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking that whoever pushed for Trae Young and OU also must have pushed for Texas not to be in a play-in game. Because
well,
that's a very, very passionate argument.
Well,
evidently.
They kept going body of work, Oklahoma, body of work. I'm sick of that phrase, body of work. It's like, what are they, 4-9 their last 13 games? Mm-hmm. That's not even average.
I'm going to tell you.
You want below average teams in the tournament?
Janet Jackson had a great song back in the mid-'80s, back when I had hair. It was called What Have You Done For Me Lately?
That's true.
And what has OU done for us lately? Nothing. Trae Young shooting about 28% from the field in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
Can't buy a three. He's
Brady
tired.
Manic. I mean, they just fell apart.
And then meanwhile, Mike Boynton, one of the best young coaches in the business.
He impresses me.
He beats Kansas twice.
Twice. And West Virginia. Texas Tech. And Oklahoma.
4-2 against the top three teams, and he can't get in the tournament.
You guys know I really, really like Chris Beard. He and I go way back covering Texas Tech, you know, a long time, you know, with Bob Knight. It's over a decade now. But with all due respect to Bill Self and Chris Beard, Mike Boynton should have been the coach of the year.
Thank you.
Mike Boynton should have been the Big 12 coach of the year.
They were picked dead last.
They were picked dead last. And I go back to this thing at Media Day. Boynton joked. He says, people here don't even know my name.
He said that.
He did say that. And for them, and for the bang to hype ratio, for what they were expected to what they did, Boynton was terrific. Had a terrific year.
I'm not sure that committee knew his name. I just almost think it was in their mind, Oklahoma is a tournament team. I don't want to hear it. Don't tell me anything else. They're a tournament team where everybody who sees them night in, night out like we all did, know Oklahoma State's a lot better than they are.
And you know what, to me, and I know they're not getting the broadcast rights for this tournament, but it's just another example of the ESPN-ification that's going on in college basketball.
Absolutely.
The Trae Young ticker. I mean, they lose like five games in a row, and Trae Young is 1 out of 7. Oh, Trae Young is.
It's all about star power.
Listen.
Star power.
And he's not even the best player in the conference.
What do you think, Brian?
Cedric, the day that Texas played at OU, you know, people were texting me and tweeting me. It's like, Jesus Christ, are they even going to acknowledge Texas is at the Lloyd Noble Center? Right? Because it was Baker Mayfield sat down with them, and it was Trae Young this, Trae Young that. Oh, by the way, Texas is winning. Oh, by the way, Texas won. Oh, but Trae Young, da-da-da-da-da-da. Right? And a lot of Longhorn fans were furious that day at the coverage because it was like a pro-OU advertisement.
And nobody could name an Oklahoma State player, so they're in.
Yeah, exactly.
But, and you know what's funny about this, the whole thing? And our brackets are just a bunch of crapshoot, as most every bracket is. I picked OU to win a game because Utah has got to be the loosest team in NCAA tournament history. You talk about nothing to lose, you know.
I picked Rhode Island on GP, general principle.
You don't want OU to win.
I don't want OU to win because OU doesn't deserve to be in the tournament. There's some pretty good teams that didn't get chance. USC went 12-6 in the Pac-12, and they don't get in.
And 5, 8, and 10 teams got in.
I mean, 8 and 10. Yeah, you finish under 500, and that's looked upon
middle
better.
Middle Tennessee almost 130. It's telling the mid majors. I don't know.
It's stacked
you don't
against
belong.
Them. The deck is stacked against them.
It says
them.
You better go 30-0, or we're not going to consider you.
It has a very BCS feel to it.
And it's sad for college basketball because, I don't know, there's not many sport weekends better than this first weekend with the first round and second round games.
It all goes back to when the premier school is caught red-handed having fake classes, giving out fake grades, and North Carolina
Teflon
doesn't even get a slap on the wrist.
Teflon.
Just skated.
Yeah, I mean, the same entity that quote-unquote, you know, investigated North Carolina is the same entity that's putting on this tournament.
Well, you're right.
And I'm sorry, but CBS and Turner aren't paying billions of dollars to see Middle Tennessee.
They aren't.
They're just not.
Wait a minute.
You're exactly right, both of you. But why can't they have one? You got the Dukes and the North Carolinas in there and the Kentuckys. But I would say most of America, I want to see Middle Tennessee knock off a Kentucky. Don't you? That's the charm of the tournament.
If Middle Tennessee's playing, I might scroll over there because there's so many channels. But
if you see, they're 2 points ahead of Kentucky with 6 minutes left.
That's exciting.
You ain't going to switch from that. That's exciting. You're watching
But in reality, we all know what's going to happen. We're all going to go, oh, and then Kentucky wins, right? So it's like, you know.
And we all want Kentucky to win because no one wants their bracket busted that
early. George Mason
and
VCU have been in the Final Four, okay? So I like one team like that getting there. And last year, was there 2 7 seeds?
Why is your bracket so chalky then?
Well, I picked who I think will, not who I want. It's not – I can't get who I want. Oklahoma wouldn't be in the tournament.
But we all agree
want
that.
To, I want – Texas will be in there and
Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State will be in the finals. Kansas, I think, has a very good draw, I think. I'd love to see three Big 12 teams in there in San Antonio.
In reality, if the tournament went chalk, CBS and Turner wouldn't like that either.
No.
They want the upsets.
Sure
they need
they
the
do.
Upsets. But
that's the madness part of March Madness.
That's the madness part of it. But at the same time, they need the teams that draw eyeballs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's the bulk of the field. So, but we've gotten away from the horns now. They're going to Nashville. They play on Friday afternoon.
3:30.
Play a very good Nevada team with just 27-7. Brian, what are their chances of winning and getting to the Sweet 16 by maybe bumping off Cincinnati as well?
See why are you already jumping ahead?
I like to look ahead. I'm excited.
Holy smokes. It is only one podcast a week. So, okay, here's the thing.
Some people think that's one too many.
One too many. I think they have a really good chance against Nevada. I really do. The Twins are going to be tough. Nevada's Twins, the Martin Twins.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys that Shaka Smart knows very well, tried to recruit them to VCU. Thing about Nevada is that they're not very tall. They have five players listed as 6'7".
Like all 6'7".
Right, yeah. They're all kind of 6'7".
Havoc.
But the one thing that they do very well is they do shoot the three ball pretty good. And Texas has shown they have been susceptible to perimeter defense as well. Now, granted, you look back at their season, I think Kansas hitting 17 three bombs on Texas was...
That was here.
That was just... I think that was Kansas being Kansas. But TCU in both games hit 10 three-pointers against the Bevos. So, you know, Coleman, Roach, Jericho Sims, who's going to get pulled out of the lane at times. I mean, every single person in Shaka's lineup, they better be ready to get out there and get their hand high, you know, and run through. They got to run guys off the line.
Well, here's a guy you didn't mention, Mohamed Bamba.
Who's that?
Said he's 100%, said that big toe is feeling nice.
He did.
Do you think, 14 minutes?
14 minutes against Tech.
Against Tech. Do you think Mo Bamba can log 20 to 25 minutes in a game that they're going to need him? This is a great matchup. This is a pretty good big team, Texas. They are very big up front against a team that's not so big.
And Nevada's not a very good defensive team.
Exactly. So Mo Bamba could be the X factor in all of this.
He's the factor.
Yeah, but he could be if he plays.
Oh, he's going to play.
If he plays 25 minutes. If he plays 14 minutes, I don't think that's going to be enough for them to get
there.
I think he has to go 30.
I agree.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
What are your expectations from Mo Bamba performance-wise?
Well, you got to look at it. He only played 14 minutes last week, and then he didn't play in the two previous regular season games before that. I've asked him this several times. I said, it would kill you not to be in the NCAAs, right? He goes, oh, my God, yes. You know, just Mo is a cool character. He's one of the coolest guys that have come through Texas basketball in quite a long time.
He really is.
He really, really is. It's a damn shame that Texas fans aren't going to get to see him wear burnt orange another year.
What are you trying to say?
Well, he's going to go pro and make a lot of money. But the fact is that
spoiler alert.
Exactly. My one criticism of Mo is that I do think that he should be further along in his post moves
offensively
than he really is. He's going to get paid millions of dollars to work on that, but
he doesn't have a bag of tricks underneath.
He really
doesn't.
But
you know what's funny about that? Jericho Sims has progressed so much, and we both, all three of us, like the job Darren Horn does with big men.
I just think that Jericho is more of a natural offensive player. I think he's far from a finished product.
Oh,
but he has a drop step. He has a baby hook, and he, unlike Mo. When Jericho goes to the rack, he gets up in the air quickly.
Yes.
He's a fast, explosive leaper. Mo has to
gather himself
before he goes up. I think Jericho is just more athletic offensively. I think he's going to be able to give them 14-10 next year. I think he's good.
I agree with that.
I tell you what I would like to see on the first three possessions against Nevada, in no particular order. I'd like to see, number one, a Febres three. Okay. Number two, Dylan do something other than shoot a three that gets some points. Okay. And I'd like to see Jericho get one of those dribble dunks, right? If you can get those three players going early, I think Texas has a really good chance.
Especially,
all three of those guys need to have something good happen to kind of get them going.
Well, they've gotten such slow starts lately.
But especially Dylan. Oh, my God. Oh. He's got to show up in the first half or they're going to get beat. I'm sorry. He cannot. You cannot have him going one out of three with one rebound in the first half against a team that's not very good defensively. And if they go ahead and start Mo, and I'm
they will,
and they probably will. So if they're gonna go, with Mo and Dylan and Jace and Matt Coleman and
Snoop,
then Dylan's got to do something on the block. You can't be settling for threes.
That's essential.
He has dipped under 30%. He's in the 20s now from three-point land. He's like 29% now.
Well, and that's one of the issues that I think y'all have too, is they take too many threes. And when Shaq and the players say, well, we've got to do that, I go, why? You're open for those threes because they want you
to shoot those threes.
When you're shooting that poor percentage, I don't understand what the theory
is. They back off for a reason.
Exactly.
They back off for a reason. I wouldn't mind seeing him go big.
Who?
Shaka.
Yeah,
I wouldn't mind seeing it. You've got the size.
As athletic as Nevada
advantage.
Is, you know,
but I'm saying a lineup of up front of Mo, Jericho, and Dylan, and then you start Snoop and Matt Coleman.
You know, the thing about that,
it's what Texas does best. They're a good big team.
I don't see that.
But I don't think they'll do it. But I bet you see that lineup a lot.
The thing about that said, you remember when they showed that, Shaka unveiled that lineup against a non-conference opponent? I can't remember who it was, but that was the talk afterwards. Like, ooh, that's an intriguing lineup. Mm-hmm. Well, you also had Andrew Jones and Eric Davis.
That's a big difference.
At that time. I mean, it's going to be hard to do that now just because they have seven guys, and Shaka is going to be mindful of all of their foul situations. Because let's be honest, Mo gets silly fouls. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets some silly fouls from time to time.
Snoop
does too. You know, Matt Coleman does too.
Matt Coleman's gotten a lot lately.
Coleman's kind of is a freshman, and that happens to younger players. Snoop is a little bit too advanced. I mean, he gets three fouls at the Big 12 tournament. You look up and he's picked up that fourth just like that because he's reaching. You got to be more aware of your situation.
You got to have a higher basketball IQ. I like Matt Coleman. He's really grown on me, and I think he's really matured. And
he's a program. He's a program player. He's going to be around for a couple of years.
I've been really impressed with him. Now, we haven't mentioned Jacob Young, the X factor. Are you expecting 29 points, Brian, from Jacob Young on Friday? Not that many.
Okay. Yeah, he'll be out there.
He does it in practice. So.
He does it in practice. You know what? Josh Rowland makes kicks in practice, too. That's what I was told. You know, here's the thing about Jacob Young. I mean, I think at this point, anything you get out of him is gravy, really. Because here's the thing.
They need him.
They do need him. But this coaching staff, I think it would be very ill-advised if they went into a game of this magnitude thinking, well, we're going to get a dozen out of him, and you know, we're going to get 15 out of him. No, you're not.
It's gravy. It's gravy.
It's total gravy at this point.
Because, well, who's going to give it? If they're going to win, we're talking about if they're going to win. I think Jacob Young's got to score 10 points.
I don't think so. Listen,
I'm not saying that he can't do that. He certainly can. I'm just saying that if I'm building a game plan, I don't build it for him to go off for 20.
No.
Or 10.
I don't even build it for him to score 10.
Exactly.
I'm telling you, that there are more plays run for Jace Febres than are run for Jacob Young.
Yes.
Jacob Young, when he scored 29 points, that was completely unexpected, of course, and it was gravy. Now, they run plays to try to get Jace shots because Jace is a better shooter than Jacob Young, and he's a lot more disciplined. I think it's a bigger deal that Dylan Osikowski go for 16 or 17
yes.
than Jacob Young going for 10.
And here's my other X factor. All those guys have to play well. I think if we go to post game saying to ourselves, man, that Febres three was big, and oh, my God, that Febres bucket. To me, he's the player because he's the player that hasn't really done much.
No, he hasn't.
And on a scouting report, he's not going to be very high on anyone's scouting report, you know, only because he hasn't done much lately. The tournament is about guys kind of superseding their boundaries, you know.
And over, showing up.
Yeah, showing up big.
He's one of those guys that could be a big factor.
Yes, he'd be a huge factor.
Because he hasn't been since the Baylor game, what has he really done?
Well, he hasn't. That's
he had three threes the other night.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are missing one important factor, in my opinion, confidence. Jace doesn't have confidence. Jacob Young does. He brings confidence to the gym. He's fearless. Maybe too much confidence.
I was going
to
say
Jacob Young came out of the chute, slapped the doctor, and said, I can do this better than you.
You're right, and I want that. Yeah. I want that.
And that could be a help or that can be a detriment.
For sure.
So you got like
they're a 10th seed, okay?
Like Shaka said, he hasn't lost his mind in a while.
Yeah.
He said that.
Yes, he did.
He hasn't lost his mind in a while.
Put it right on right now.
He hasn't fouled a guy on a three-pointer in a while.
If Texas wins, Jacob Young will have at least 10 points right there.
Yes. I'm on board with that, yes.
Okay, but you're right. Dylan is crucial. They got
to if Dylan scores 8 to 10 points, they're going to get beat. They are. Dylan.
So you're saying double digits up and double digits down is the cut line?
Dylan's got to give them 15 and 8. He's got to give them that. Mm. And Mo's got to give them a double-double. We know that.
Hey, Nevada scores 83 points a game. They're going to fill it up.
But you know what that says to me? That says to me that they get threes and they get score in transition.
Sure.
So to me, it's transition defense.
Well, that's why. Can you play three bigs?
Right.
If you're worried about transition defense.
But I'm not saying play three bigs for the whole game, but I'm saying play three bigs when if you're up on them, you put those big boys in there and you lean on them and you be physical with them. You get Dylan Osikowski. He has to be a post presence.
Oh, sure.
I'm not talking about him shooting six threes. I'm talking about him shooting 15 times, and at least 11 of those have to be 2 points.
We agree.
And get to the free throw line.
I will say this, is that the tone and feel of this entire week is so different than what it was 2 years ago. I mean, think about it. We were going to Oklahoma City. Oh, Cam will do this, and Prince will do that, and Isaiah will do this, that, and the other. And they're going to steamroll Northern Iowa, right? And they didn't, and then they got Paul Jesperson at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this feels like, you know, they're going to have to really, you know, get in there and battle if they're going to do it. But I may be in the very small minority here. I really like this draw for them. I really like Nevada. I like a possible matchup with Cincinnati. I mean, it's not crazy to say that they win two games.
Yeah,
but they have to win. But
yeah,
they have to win first.
No,
I understand that.
Just because you didn't pick them, Bowles.
You don't think it's crazy?
Going up, you're protecting your.
So you got him in the
bracket.
Sweet 16, Seth.
I've got him winning one game.
Okay,
he has another one.
So then you're saying it's crazy?
It's not crazy.
Mick Cronin, by the way, Mick Cronin at Cincinnati will absolutely want to show a Big 12 team why his program deserved to be in the Big 12.
Oh, you sure? And that brings us to Shaka. This is end of year three. And his record is 50-49. What does that tell you, Brian Davis?
Shaka has been the victim of some really bad luck.
He is.
He really, really has. Because if that Paul Jesperson shot rims out, I will go to my grave convinced that they would have smoked A&M in the next round, and Texas would have been a Sweet 16 team.
I believe that because A&M didn't show up the first
half. Absolutely.
The next
game. Okay, so then the next year, you knew the whole thing was a rebuilding year. You knew that.
Isaiah left.
And then Isaiah left. Now, I have been very, very public about this. It is on this coaching staff that they didn't recruit a point guard to replace Isaiah because they knew Isaiah leaving was a possibility. They just knew that was a possibility.
Just like Charlie Strong putting all of his eggs in the David Ash basket.
Absolutely. And for them to sit back and wait on Matt Coleman another year, you cannot blow off a year just to get a recruit. I don't care how good that recruit may or may not be, right? So they should have gotten a point guard last year. Now this year, some serious bad luck. No one projects that your leading scorer is going to come down with cancer, obviously. But the fact that they have pulled this thing together, pulled it out of the ashes – no Andrew Jones, no Mo Bamba down the stretch, no Eric Davis down the stretch, and they beat West Virginia, and they did what they needed to against Iowa State. They got to the tournament. That's pretty good.
I think so, and this is big for Shaka. You don't want to go into the offseason a 500 coach.
You don't.
I know it's just one more win, but that's a big deal. That's as big a deal as Tom Herman winning that bowl game. Tom Herman didn't want to come back for his second year, a 6-7 coach. You can go into the offseason thinking, all right, we got to build on this. So they win Friday, then he's guaranteed that he will be above 500 coming back as a coach. And Shaka's a very introspective person. He might not say it as much, but he does a lot of self-examination.
Sure he does.
Looking at himself as a coach, and is he getting through to these guys? This is, I'm not trying to over-dramatize this. I think this is the biggest game of his coaching career, Friday.
One thing, Kirk, before you get going here. Mm-hmm. These coaches, They will never admit this publicly. But privately, they knew that Texas had not missed back-to-back tournaments since 87 and 88. They did not want it to be 2017, 2018. They knew that, and trust me, they knew getting to the tournament was a big, big deal.
Because not making the tournament would show no progress.
Right.
And that's what got Charlie Strong fired after 3 years. They were going backwards. You can't lose to Kansas football at the end of year three. Now, I would say, if you say this season is a success, I would say it's the bare minimum of success. Because Texas has gotten used to being in the NCAA tournament. Like
long
you said,
time.
Rick Barnes missed one tournament in his 17 years here. So I think that was the bare minimum. The thing, and I think Shaka can still get it done here. I really do. He's a good guy. We like Shaka. He's shown he can recruit. He's got two lottery picks, okay? The thing that bothers me a little bit, they don't always look well coached. And even with those excuses, and those very legitimate excuses, still you can look better coached. And when you take 33s and you're shooting 28% as a team or whatever it is, that doesn't give the fan a lot of hope. Like, yeah, we've been stuck with all this bad luck and everything, and we have. But we can still look well coached. And they do. They hustle. They go after loose balls. They play defense. I will give them that.
But it's the offense. It's the offense.
Always been the offense. First question you ever asked Shaka was what?
You got any shooters?
Exactly. And you're still asking him that today.
Ask him that preseason every year. Mm-hmm. And he still doesn't. And that's paramount for next year. He's got to get shooters. And whether Brock Cunningham or Hepa or Jace Febres or Jacob Young now becomes that guy, because I don't know if there's anybody on the team, maybe Jace, can be that shooter. You got to have some people. Look at Kansas. Look at the way they've taken a record threes for Kansas and made a record threes, and that's why they're good every year. You got to be able to hit threes in college
right.
basketball.
And you know what? And I'm not trying to put the cart before the horse, but maybe one day Andrew Jones comes back.
And oh, we'll, sure.
And we'll have
absolutely.
He wasn't a pure shooter. He was the best they had.
He was a 46% shooter from the field.
Mm-hmm.
They will take that all day long and twice on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a guy that could be a program changer. Our prayers continue to be with him.
Absolutely.
I can't wait to see how his story turns out. He's on the mend, and I would love to see him back playing basketball.
And the other thing I would just leave it with is that, you know, we all like Shaka, and I think he's a man of integrity, and I think he's the type of person you want being the face of your program. Now he's just got to deliver some wins.
Absolutely. I think that's it. He checks a lot of boxes. If you're an athletic director, just they need to win some games.
Well, Friday is the big game. Horn v. Wolfpack, 3:30 p.m. in Nashville, Tennessee, at the Bridgestone Arena. I don't know what channel it's going to be on. Just flip around. It'll be there somewhere.
CBS, TBS.
True TV,
I think it's TBS.
Court TV, Home and Garden Network. It's going to be on a lot of channels. I'm thinking TBS like YouTube.
And it will be in your paper Saturday morning.
And the hits, they just keep on coming. We had Brian Davis, and now we're welcoming another friend of the podcast, Rick Cantu, a.k.a. the Slickster, is in the dungeon and he's got a little bit of news for us. Apparently, Karen Aston likes her bracket. The Longhorns play Maine at 5 o'clock Saturday at Irwin Center in the first round of the NCAAs. Slick, why does she like this bracket?
Well, there are two reasons. One, she's a number two seed. That shows respect around the country. That means you're top eight.
Mm-hmm.
If you ask me, I think the only thing that she was really happy about was just not being in UConn's bracket.
Yeah, that's big.
You know,
two years in a row, that's a record.
If she had gone to Spokane or Lexington, you know, I would have think she would have been happy with that too. Just to not go to Albany. Albany is only an hour's drive from Connecticut. It would be 10,000 fans to 10,
mm-hmm.
you know, for UT. So Karen's happy when they're playing at home. That's important. Get those first two wins out of the way and take your chances in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. Well, last year they struggled a little bit against, NC State?
They struggled against NC State, and they pulled it out. And that was NC State was a darn good basketball team last year.
Oh, my God, those guards.
It wasn't like Texas played poorly and still found a way to win.
Right.
NC State played their butts off, and if it wasn't for a close charge call that Joyner Holmes took,
right,
we may have not had that trip to Lexington last year.
And after that game that week, I was texting back and forth with Karen, and we both agreed that was the best backcourt that they faced last year. And they faced Christy Wallace last year, but those two girls from NC State
mm-hmm.
could do everything, and they carried that team to the brink
yeah.
of an upset. So I don't think the Maine Black Bears are going to present that kind of a challenge. Rick, what do you know about them?
I know they're from Bangor.
I
know
Bangor.
That they won they won their conference tournament. They also won the regular season championship. So other than that, they don't have any big-time scores. I think their big-time score average is maybe 12 a game.
Mm-hmm.
They like to slow it down. They haven't played anybody, obviously. It's not going to be a challenge. If they don't win by 30, mm-hmm. The FBI should be here the next day.
And Texas is going to want to speed it up, obviously.
Now, on Monday night, it could be a different case. I think if Arizona State beats Nebraska, well, I think if either one, no matter who wins, I think that would be a bigger challenge, just like North Carolina State last year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No guarantees. How about the health of the team in the front court? Audrey has that wrist, and she's been out for a while. They're not counting on her, are they?
They're not counting on her. Publicly, they're just saying she's day-to-day, but they've been saying she's day-to-day for about 5 weeks now.
She's a lot of days.
She's not playing, really.
She ran out of days. I saw her yesterday, and I went up to her, and I politely asked her. I said, Audrey, any chance that you're going to play? And she says, I'm day-to-day, which is the company line. They like to do mm-hmm. the company line. The players are afraid to speak out. But she's got a brace on that wrist
right.
as a result of the surgery.
Right.
There's no way. There's no way.
You know what the most overused term in sports when we're talking about injuries? Minor surgery. Mm-hmm. No such thing.
Mm-hmm.
A surgery is a surgery. And a lot of people don't bounce back right away from a surgery. She had a wrist surgery a month ago. She is not day to day. They want Karen's not going to say it, and that's fine. And after all, none of the people that they're going to play are sitting there going, what are we going to do about Audrey and Caron Goudreau? They're not even talking like that. They're saying, what are we going to do about Ariel Atkins? What are we going to do about Brooke McCarty? What if LaShawn Higgs goes off? Because she's a big-time scorer when she's right upstairs.
It's Hugh Sutton. I mean, guards are at.
The women's game. The men's game is mostly a guards game.
Oh, yeah.
The women's game is kind of a guards game, but if you got a big girl.
Mm-hmm. Like Kalani Brown.
Like Kalani Brown at Baylor, like Lauren Cox at Baylor, like Asia Wilson at South Carolina winning a national championship. If you got big girls,
you can dominate.
Which brings me to my next question. Slick, you have jumped into that subject of front courts versus back courts. Tell the people what you're working on.
I'm working on a story for the, I believe, the Saturday paper on who has the edge when the basketball tournament is on the line, the front court or the back court. And I asked Karen Assman point blank. I said yesterday, Karen, what do you think? And the first thing that came out of her mouth was the backcourt, the guards. And I asked her, well, why is that? She says, well, when the game's on the line, who's got the ball in their hands? Mm-hmm. It's the backcourt. And she's blessed with three very good starters, maybe the one of the top three tandems in the country at that position.
And a good four in Shug Sutton.
But she did say this, and we just now spoke about it. If you do have a big girl who can play, then that could make a difference too. Mm-hmm. You know, going back to Asia Wilson last year, she carried South Carolina to the national championship. You know, I remember Tina Charles did that for UConn back in the day, or Rebecca Lobo a long time ago.
Candace Parker, Tennessee.
Brittany Griner, you know, rings a bell.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're out there.
That's an intriguing story. I'm looking forward to reading
That would be good, the difference between the men and the women's sports. But what do you think the key factor is for Texas if they're going to make the deep run that they hope to? What do you see an X factor or a key factor that has to happen for them?
If a key factor or an X factor is a player, I think it's going to be Jatari White.
She's been good lately,
Slick. She's been good lately. She was excellent against Baylor.
She took it to those big girls.
She took it to them, and Karen was griping after the game was over that her smaller players didn't feed her the ball enough.
She was right.
They couldn't get Kalani in foul trouble. They couldn't get Lauren in foul trouble, and she was 6-for-8 from the field.
And can finish with both hands. I love that about her.
She has a knack for finding a small crease where to throw the ball up, and it winds up going into the basket.
Wicked angles. She is a natural interior post mm-hmm. player. I'm telling you, Shaka Smart should show some Jatari White footwork mm-hmm. to his bigs.
Right.
She can get it against bigger players. It's not easy to score against bigger players, but she took it to Kalani Brown. She's a lefty shooter, mm-hmm. but twice she finished with her right hand. She is adept at it. She's not a good defensive player. She's
not
okay.
A jumper.
She's not a jumper. She's not explosive, but on that offensive end, you dump it into her, she can put her hard hat on, and she can get you 16. I bet they go to her early and often, even though I do think that she will show up as a much bigger factor in the second game against an Arizona State or a Nebraska. I think this main game is going to be all about the guards. I think Texas runs them off the court.
Absolutely, but, you know, we've forgotten the big elephant in the room.
Never say an elephant when you're about to say a woman's name.
Well, you know, I've
had that problem.
I'm going to apologize to Joyner Holmes right now. But Joyner, if you're listening, and I know you are,
I said you cannot
go 1-for-10 against Baylor and expect to beat Baylor.
No.
But the problem with her this year is she hasn't been consistent. When she's good and she's on, she's as good as any sophomore in the country, but the problem is she'll turn a good game into a bad game next time around, and she played her worst game recently against Baylor. And if they have her against that in that game, 2 points, mm-hmm. 2 points is what she scored. Mm-hmm. Lauren Cox, who's also a sophomore, had 17 and 7 blocks.
I tell you, Lauren Cox is a complete college basketball player.
And they were the top two players in that recruiting class.
She is way further along right now than Joyner Holmes.
She's a lot more polished.
Joyner Holmes is an athlete playing basketball right now. Lauren Cox is a basketball player, and that's the difference.
Well, Lauren Cox knows who she is. Joyner Holmes thinks she's Kobe and a ball handler and all that, and she doesn't realize she should be camping down low.
And she's tried – her problem is, and I know, I think she's going to turn the corner with one more offseason with Tina Thompson. She's got to learn that she's quick enough that she doesn't have to go 100 miles an hour when she's going to the bucket. I mean, how many times has she just thrown up some kind of wild shot with hope?
Usually if she's driving,
yeah,
there's a decent chance.
But if she just slows down, takes 3 miles an hour
right
off the governor, I think she could be a 12-point, 10-rebound type of player. And in women's college basketball, if you can get someone to buy in to being big and using that size and athleticism, you got something. I don't know that she'll ever be an outside shooter.
I hope not.
And I know, Rick, I've said by you many games, anytime she pulls up, we all cringe. we just know it's not going
and
in.
And that's the opposite with Lauren over at Baylor. Mm-hmm. She's actually made 30 or 40 three-pointers this year, so she has that element in her game.
She'll be a good pro.
She will be a good pro. And Joyner, I thought coming into the season, before she was suspended, mm-hmm. I thought this might be her year.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember we were talking about her being in a WNBA in 4 years and maybe being a standout. But
she showed up out of shape.
She showed up out of shape, but
She looked like someone that hadn't been working on her game too. Mm-hmm.
But it's been 22 games since, Ed.
She's in better shape now, but she still has deficiencies in her game. That's the
but
problem.
It's her problem is not just being out of shape. She looks lost sometimes. She looks off balance. She looks clumsy sometimes. Yeah. Then the other time she looks strong on the boards, you know, a woman among girls.
Here's mm-hmm. the thing. She's not as good against, unlike Jatari White, who will take it to anyone, when it's bigger girls going up against Joyner, she's not as great. Now, she tried hard against Baylor. I watched that game. She was 1 out of 10 from the field, and I bet 8 of those were inside the lane.
Makeable shots.
I know against bigger girls, Kalani Brown and Lauren Cox are both taller than her. They were makeable shots. She's just not a finisher. And if I'm Karen, I don't have her shooting 1,000 jump shots a day. I have her going to the hole and learning how to finish.
How about the path to the Final Four, Rick? Who looks like the biggest obstacle if they're going to get to the Elite Eight and maybe face number 2 Mississippi State?
I mean, I think that the road to the Elite Eight is clear if they can get by that one team, and that one team is UCLA, is the 3 seed.
Right.
Now, UCLA is best known right now for being the only team to beat Baylor.
Mm-hmm. And Mulkey wasn't at that game.
Mulkey was not at that game. Unfortunately, she had a family tragedy, mm-hmm. and she couldn't make that game. And Lauren didn't play
Lauren
in that
Cox
game.
Cox was out. You're right.
She did not play in that game, and that's their one blemish. I actually voted for Kim Mulkey as National Coach of the Year.
You get no argument from me.
You know, I know that there are other coaches. Vic Schaefer, one loss at Mississippi State, and
Gino,
and Coach Muffin
mm-hmm. McGraw from Stanford,
Notre Dame had 4 players this year with ACL injuries.
Wow,
4 players, including an All-American.
Wow.
from Texas last year.
That's amazing.
And you know, and they're a 1 seed.
And what about Baylor? I'm surprised they're not a 1 seed. I know Christy Wallace is out with a knee injury, but boy, I love this Baylor team. They've got some inside outside game going. What do you think? Can Baylor win it all?
Baylor, the short answer to that is yes. They can win it all. Of course, you never know about that certain time, but I haven't seen a player this year as dominant as Kalani Brown. Kalani Brown is shooting 74% wow. from the field.
That's ridiculous.
That's
ridiculous. I mean, I know that there's some NBA guys who shoot 70%, mm-hmm. but it's all on dunks.
Yeah, DeAndre Jordan.
And she hasn't made a dunk yet this year.
Yeah.
She can't jump very high, but she's 6'7" and has great leverage.
Mm-hmm. Look, do you guys notice that she doesn't come out of the game?
No, she can play 40 minutes.
She is in great shape.
Yeah.
She runs up and down that court, and rarely. Only time she came out against Texas was when she got her 4th foul.
And Kim plays, 6 girls?
Yeah, well,
she has a player.
Kim's got problems with depth,
yeah,
and that might be a bugaboo at the end.
Right.
I mean, if they only have 6 plays, you know, I mean, right. We're talking about Christy Wallace not playing. I mean, she's a 15-point girl. She was all-conference, mm-hmm. first team. You don't just lose all conference first teamers. But I tell you what, they've got a freshman, Alexis Morris,
that
played lights out in the Big 12 tournament.
She's confident.
She made the all tournament team. She's
deserved
a freshman. While she's an all tournament team mm-hmm. member, Texas has, you know, some freshmen that haven't, you know, played much this year.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll see if they're good next year, but you know, they're losing some really good leadership off of this team.
Well, the last question I have for you, Rick, is the elite label. Karen Aston was asked about that after a loss to Baylor, since Baylor swept them this year. And Karen said, well, I guess that depends on your description. You know, I think we're already elite. I think Cedric would agree with me that you're not elite until you start winning championships. what does Karen have to do to be elite this season?
They have to win championships. And we're not talking about this season. We're talking about next season, because unless they win the national championship, if they're elite then, if they win the national championship this year.
Absolutely. Nobody would argue.
I mean, if they make the Final Four, that's a big step to becoming an elite. But you can't lose every Big 12 championship since 2003 and lose every Big 12 tournament champion every year since 2003.
And you can't go 1-18 against Baylor.
You can't go 1-18 against Baylor. With that said, do I think that they're a program on the rise?
Yes,
absolutely.
Sir. I love it.
Absolutely. They've got 26 wins this year. You know, they're going to pad that this weekend. And I would like to see it because, you know, we all like her. We all like her.
We do.
Yeah.
We do.
We like and respect her.
She's very pleasant. I love her fiery demeanor. I love her passion for the game.
Hopefully, she doesn't have too much passion. We don't need more.
We just don't need any more tees at the end of close games. She owned that. She's a stand up lady, and we respect her for that. The Longhorns will number 2 seed will play Maine Saturday at 5:00 at the Irwin Center. Go to the game.
Absolutely.
If you're in town, go to the game. Yep. I mean, this tournament's going to – I know a lot of men's fans out there. This tournament's going to be going on for a while. Go see the Longhorn ladies.
They're a very good team.
They put a good product out on the basketball court. See them.
And go Monday night, too, because there is no NCAA men's basketball on Monday night. And I know that they were hoping for a Friday-Sunday draw instead of a Saturday-Monday draw. Mm-hmm. But they didn't get it.
Yeah.
But Monday night, I mean, there's nothing else on television except The Voice, my favorite show.
Nice.
But other than that, I mean.
No Monday night football.
No Monday night football.
So, thanks, Rick. Enjoy the ride.
Yeah, you can tape Alicia Keys. Come out and see the ladies.
Absolutely.
That will do it for episode 90 of On Second Thought. We have to thank our guest, Texas men's basketball coach Shaka Smart, beat writer Brian Davis, and women's beat writer Slick Rick Cantu. For The Duck, I'm Sed Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Sed and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.
Amazon has everything for back to school. Zebra lunchbox? Check. Cool Adidas gear like t-shirts, shoes, and backpacks? Check. Triceratops folders and pencils? Check. Laser cat t-shirts? Check. Get your back to school shopping done now at amazon.com/back to school and enjoy free shipping on millions of items. No need to leave your home or hassle with crowds. Amazon.com. No better place to get everything back to school from A to Z.